The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it. Between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics. Because that's who we are.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined today by Patrick Corain, and we will be continuing our division preview series with the NFC North. We will be joined by MLive.com's Ben Raven to discuss the Lions. Corain and I will then break down the Vikings, Packers, and maybe the Bears. Byron Pringle's on the Bears. I don't know if anyone else has heard this or realized this, people talking about this. But first, we're very pleased to be joined by Mr. Ben Raven. And Ben, I'll just ask you right off the jump. I know we're like in between practice seasons right now. Mini camp's over, training camp's a few weeks away. Just wondering if you've been drinking any coffee with Dan Campbell lately, though. And if so, if you have survived what I believe, does he drink 3 44-ounce coffees a day? Is that correct? I feel like that's what I've heard.
That's what he said, and he's not shy about adding the espresso shots and stuff like that. Because I have a rep as like being a crazy energy drink and coffee person on the beat, like. I'm always getting made fun of by Justin Rogers and Chris Burke about having, oh, what's this weird energy drink today? He scares me with the caffeine he says he drinks.
Yeah, you're drinking like, so your drinking amount of energy drinks like might be enough to kill a trucker, whereas like Dan Campbell is taking so much caffeine, it would probably like kill an elephant.
And yeah.
Is it actually even possible to drink 132 ounces of coffee a day? Like, I guess anything's possible.
You build a tolerance, right? So eventually, you know, through years of hard work, you can get there.
That's true.
He's also like 6'6 and built like a truck too. So he,
yeah, you know, he probably has a little different tolerance level than like beat writers or bloggers do. So yeah, he just needs 100 ounces just to get his heart pumping. His doctors actually said it's dangerous if he drinks under 100 ounces of coffee.
He's got an IV drip.
I mean, I don't know why this is gonna be the first question I'm gonna ask you, but I mean, what's your go-to sicko energy drink right now?
I'm a Red Bull's zero sugar type guy through and through. Monster Rehab, the tea lemonade one's good. Those two are pretty much in the rotation weekly, pretty much right there. I'm on this new Celsius thing right now that are pretty good though too when I work out. So there you go.
I love Red Bull. I'm not even saying this is a joke. I love the like otherworldly metallic taste of Red Bull, which really turns some people off. I like that it tastes like it's like some sort of alien alloy. And it's by far my favorite energy drink, actually.
Well, I'm on the black cold brew train and slowly working my way up to Dan Campbell's. Yeah.
You're just trying to build up to 132 ounces.
I'll get there.
The day you finally complete the program, the 133rd ounce hits your tongue and you just drop dead. So, anyways, I guess we should actually talk football. And Ben knows a lot about football. And the first thing we wanted to ask is about Dan Campbell. And, you know, he started calling his own plays down the stretch last season. The offense started performing much better, kind of like post-Thanksgiving especially. Got the deep game going a little bit, but – you know, Dan Campbell was kind of cagey then when he was asked this spring, I think it was in March, about who will be calling plays this year. And maybe he's updated this and we just missed it in the intervening 3 or 4 months. But I mean, Ben, do we know, will it be Campbell or will it be offensive coordinator Ben Johnson calling the plays this year? I mean, and does it matter even?
We don't know yet because we asked weekly, like when we would get him in mini camp and the OTAs and stuff like that. And he's just kind of tongue in cheek saying, you'll know when I know and stuff like that. But I mean, my gut was always that Campbell would call the plays with kind of Johnson kind of breathing life into the passing attack. But then mini camps, OTAs, you get in 7-on-7s, you get the offense going against the defense, and it's Johnson calling plays. So it's I mean, every coach, every player has been hyping up Ben Johnson with every breath they've been able to this offseason. So I'm kind of changing my gut feeling a little bit that it will be Ben Johnson. But I mean, and that's just based on him saying he sat down with Jared Goff and Jared Goff saying that he actually had input on this offense. And I mean, that's been the thing that I think has been the most important thing is that Jared Goff's comfort under these guys. Like, I think comfort is so important to Jared Goff and feeling like he has a voice, like that really matters to him, because he just seemed like a different mindset dude when we got to talk to him right before summer broke. I mean, shoot, 11 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 70% completion percentage when those guys were calling the play. So I mean, I don't know if it matters at the end of the day, because I mean, Campbell's still the head coach and he's got that overseeing decision, but I really do get the gut feeling that Johnson will get the first crack at it in the preseason, and that should be good for the passing game.
The way you describe Jared Goff, too, I mean, it sounded like maybe a guy who was used to having zero input and maybe is finally, like, really welcoming that. Maybe it was holding him back. I mean, I kind of doubt, I guess, that Sean McVay was holding him back. But
he did say, he's like, I feel like I deserve this. I feel like I've deserved this input, and to see it actually come into life is really important. I mean, he's like, I'm year seven guy now. It's like, I don't know. He just was a happier camper than he was last year when we got to meet him and talk to him. So
how would you even describe what the Dan Campbell offense was down the stretch? Because to me, it seemed like more design deep shots, like a little run heavier. Maybe it's just because the games were closer, though, and they could run more. And, you know, we're trying to stay what was the biggest change you thought after Dan Campbell took over for Anthony Lynn calling plays last year?
They were faster out of the huddle. There was more tempo. They were in the shotgun more, it seemed like. And I mean, they were just finding unique ways to use their guys instead of just a traditional approach. I mean, that was a slow, very painful, boring offense to watch first half of the season. And I mean, it was like, we felt like we were watching a different team down the stretch. I mean, the motion just felt like it blew up off the screen. The pre-snap, I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown getting carries. I mean, I tried not to overblow Josh Reynolds, but like, he was a game-changing addition for that offense down the stretch, just adding a tall vertical threat. I think it just I just think it opened a lot of things up and letting Ben Johnson have a voice in that room and using those guys. I mean, Amon-Ra, he was all over the place those last 8 weeks. I mean, motion, getting the ball out of the backfield, short passes, middle passes. I mean, he's a do-it-all guy, and they kind of based the offense around him when Hockenson and Swift were banged up down there.
You mentioned Josh Reynolds' addition being surprisingly important. That was my takeaway as well. Like, you just saw the, you know, having a reliable guy, someone that Goff had a decent connection with, made a big difference compared to what they've been rolling out before that. Now we're looking at potentially really, really big upgrades at the wide receiver position, especially once Jameson Williams is back to full strength. What are your thoughts on this wide receiver room this year? Because Amon-Ra St. Brown has gotten decent amount of hype based on what he did down the stretch. Very exciting upside. But, you know, as you mentioned, some of that came with Hockenson, Swift out. Now Jameson Williams added, now Shark added. How do you think targets get distributed among the wide receivers here?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be really interesting. I mean, the wide receiver situation, I mean, it's hard not to give hats off to Brad Holmes, because last year we were talking about Quintez Cephas as the potential number two or number three guy, and now he's fighting for a roster spot in that 6-7 spot. But, I mean, the target share, it's going to be interesting, because I do think even with Shark, even with Reynolds back, Raymond back, you know, I'm starting to think it's going to be a little bit before Williams is on the field, so that's going to take a minute. I do think St. Brown is like, outside of Hockenson, is like the focal point of that offense. Like, I really think they want to run things through him. I mean, I think if Dan Campbell could create a wide receiver, maybe he'd add a couple inches to him, but I think it would be Amon-Ra St. Brown. I mean, they want to block with him. They want to run with him. They want to just get him the ball with space, and I think that's going to be something different this year, because like you said, I mean, the additions at wide receiver, I mean, there should be more room to breathe. Yeah, targets are going to be harder to come by, but like, with St. Brown, my thing has been, I don't see him getting fewer than 6 targets in a game. And I think when Hockenson is healthy, I mean, he feels like an 8, 9, 10 target a game guy. I mean, when he's healthy and on the field, that is Jared Goff's best friend still, is TJ Hockenson. And we kind of forgot about that down the stretch and all these additions too. But I still think Hockenson is the top threat. And then 1B is St. Brown, even with the additions.
So how do you feel with St. Brown? I don't know how familiar you are with like the rhythms of fantasy necessarily. Do you play fantasy, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. For sure. Yeah.
So he's going right now. St. Brown is the wide receiver 29, an underdog, the best ball drafts, which was like a really sharp drafting group. So he's going as like a mid-range wide receiver 3. And just, do you think, is that about right? I mean, if you're only forecasting like roughly 6 targets per game, that might be right, but – I mean, do you think Amon Ross St. Brown will be a top 30 receiver in fantasy, and will he potentially be a lot more than? And we know that you don't have like some silver bullet answer on this, but on a gut level, how does that feel to you for Amon Ross?
Yeah, that honestly feels about right, because there should be some hesitancy just with the additions in that room and just how Dan Campbell and those guys still want to run the ball at the end of the day with all those additions, even though. But I mean, that feels like a really safe spot, because 6 targets a game is what I feel like is his floor. Like that, I feel like,
so let's pump the ADP up then.
I was gonna say, I mean, in that 20 to 30 range, that feels pretty safe for him. I feel like he's a guy that could get you more, and if he gets you what you expect, you're pretty happy. But he just feels like such a high floor type of guy just in this offense, what they want to do, and just kind of, I mean, how he showed up this offseason too. I mean, he's just taken the ball and run since he got the opportunity, it seems like. I mean, we noticed him a year ago. I mean, the dude's just different. He was just different at those practices, and we didn't really expect top rookie numbers. But yeah,
8 catches every week.
Yeah, double-digit targets, 8 catches, a couple hundred-yard games. I mean, he showed he could do a little bit of everything, and I mean, he might have some weeks where he only gets 5-6 targets, like I said, but I just think that's a guy that's going to really benefit from others distracting defenders from him.
So, yeah, it is. Well, it's a lot different, as Crane kind of alluded to, as you kind of alluded to, like competing for targets. Like now he's going to be competing for targets with DJ Shark and Jameson Williams, as opposed to Khalif Raymond and Josh Reynolds, which, you know, like no offense to those guys, but yeah, it is like a talent upgrade. And by the way, a quick aside, that's what made me notice the Dan Campbell offense last year. It was like the fact that they made Josh Reynolds productive, like a waiver wire claim. Like all of a sudden, you know, he's like catching deep balls every guy. I know I had some chemistry left over with Jared Goff from LA, but that was like, wow, maybe Dan Campbell actually kind of, you know, knows what he's doing with offense. And so Jameson Williams, we didn't like to hear that. So you're kind of starting to feel like not ready for the beginning of the regular season.
Yeah, it feels like the brakes are being pumped on that. You know, Jameson was the one that was always saying he thought he would be ready for training camp. And I mean, they were like, yeah, maybe. I mean, the last we heard from Campbell was about a month ago. He just said he doesn't think he's going to be ready for the start of training camp. And I mean, I'm reading the tea leaves, like looking ahead. I mean, they have a week 5 or 6 bye this year. So it's kind of like, maybe they just kind of wait it out until then, maybe, is the vibe I'm getting. But I mean, if he's ready to roll, they're going to let him go. But just the last kind of word we've been getting, the last vibes I was getting from out at the team facility, was that they're going to really slow it down. And I mean, Ben Johnson was even saying, which I wasn't reading much into, that it's going to be hard to integrate him into the offense. So it's just like, no, you're going to get him out there immediately when he's healthy. I just think it might be, that's just my opinion, is after the bye week, since they have an early one.
So yeah, do you think the pup list, which is now only 4 games instead of 6, do you think that might happen? Or do you think they'll try to stay on the optimistic side and lean against putting them on the reserve pup list to begin the year?
I think they'll try to lean on the optimistic side. I think that he hasn't done anything in front of us yet besides sit on the sideline and hold the ball, so it's really hard to say. But I do think that he'll be in that time frame of, let's see if he can get out there and run some routes in training camp and see how he feels, and maybe – yeah, I just have a hard time even seeing him in a preseason game, to be completely honest with you. But I do think that they'll try and tread on the optimistic side just to give themselves a chance, because, I mean, with him out there, it's they've got so many weapons. Yeah. It just feels like such a different offense. It's wild.
And you mentioned with, the kind of additional targets for Hockenson still being the 1A here. One of the things last year was that it was so easy to just assign Hockenson targets in the preseason. Like, who else could possibly be getting targets? But he actually struggled at times to earn those targets, because we saw the defenses were also aware that that was their only option. Yeah. So it's kind of like just taking away a tight end, which, you know, can sometimes be a bit easier than, you know, a star wide receiver. So, you know, my curiosity about how this offense breaks down is like, does the addition of Jameson Williams, Amon Ross St. Brown entering his second year, Shark, does that actually help Hockenson see targets more consistently compared to last year when defenses could really key on him?
Absolutely. And I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, he was the only thing going into the season last year. And then I really think that he's in that 9 to 11 target range, which he was showing up as. But I mean, he was it. I mean, he was getting bumped at the line of scrimmage by two guys. He was getting bumped by everyone before his, like, even primary coverage guy was taken over. It was just, I mean, the defenses were throwing everything they had at Hockenson because there was just nothing out there. And I really do think, like you said, I mean, even St. Brown and Shark on the outside with Raymond Reynolds and potentially Jameson Williams. I mean, it's just, this is a guy that eats over the middle. It's a guy that's gotten a lot better at running routes, getting separation from defenders and coverage. I mean, this is, if TJ Hockenson is winning one-on-one, he's going to do pretty good in that situation more times than not. So I really think that, I mean, he could even be better than expected this season, because, like, even more so than St. Brown, those additions help him. That talent addition helps him. And I mean, another season with Jared Goff. I mean, we'll see. I mean, you saw it in those first 2 weeks last year. I think he had like 21 targets or 20 targets through the first two games, and then teams woke up and he had like,
I think he averaged his first career 20 week one targets.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's always been a thing where he gets like 29 targets in week one. But I think that's the correct way to look at it from both of you. Where that's kind of how I viewed it with TJ Hockenson. It's just that I thought he did struggle with teams just being able to roll so much coverage his way. And I just don't think that's an option this year. And I guess it could depend on Jameson Williams' recovery timeline. And so that's another thing I want to ask you about. Like, when Jameson Williams is back, say it's week three, week four, week five, whatever, from like the date that Jameson Williams is back. And again, we're aware that just because you're a beat writer, you're not going to be able to like say, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But like, from the date that Jameson Williams is back, who do you think is going to produce more fantasy points, Jameson Williams or DJ Shark?
I think Shark this year, the full season, with or without him, I think he's, you know, I think this is going to be a money-making year for that dude. I mean, when he showed up, he was taller, he was faster. He just, like, when that dude's healthy, I mean, the last time he was healthy, he was a 1,000-yard guy, and I just think that was, like, one of the things missing from this offense is that a bona fide, like, yards after catch type guy. And that's something where Jared Goff is pretty good at usually, is a short to intermediate stuff. And that's a guy that's really gonna, he could eat. I mean, he could really eat if St. Brown and Hockenson get cooking and all of a sudden Shark's got one-on-one on the other side with an inferior defender. I mean, big thing with him is just staying healthy. But I do think year one, even if JMO is healthy week one, week two, week three, I think that Shark's going to be the better fantasy producer in year one.
Shark was a bit pigeonholed at times in Jacksonville as like a pure deep threat. Do you think he'll get used more in the intermediate, like some crossing stuff, that those types of, you know, a little bit more creative in terms of his route deployment?
Yeah, I really do. I think he's going to, I mean, that's the last time we got to talk to him. Well, he was basically throwing Jacksonville under the bus without throwing them under the bus, just saying exactly what you said. I got used one way and that was it sometimes. And I mean, he's not going to have a St. Brown role that had last year, but I mean, you're going to see him doing short intermediate stuff. And I mean, he's going to be the deep threat for sure too, but they feel pretty good about the versatility of the wide receiver corps too. And I mean, that's really going to benefit him and let him do some of the team things that he wants and thinks he can do. So for sure.
I also think maybe getting into narrative street here, I feel like Dan Campbell might be a slightly better motivator than Urban Meyer of NFL players, and that he might enjoy being in this Lions locker room a little more.
You're out on a limb there, Pat.
Yeah, going out on a limb there. Yeah, DJ Shark, you hit it. Like, that guy, I mean, he seemed like – so he was someone who, like, seemed kind of overdrafted as a second-round pick when he came in the league. And then, like, he had that breakout season. I was like, wow, actually DJ Shark was not overdrafted. He's very good. And now that it's been a while since we've seen him healthy and in a good situation. So I'm glad that you think he's like someone to like kind of like keep an eye on this year, because he's still very young, and the guys put those kind of big plays on film seems worth following. Crane, you want to ask about the backfield? Or I'll start. DeAndre Swift, once again, limited to 13 games last year by injury, kind of playing in to the narrative, the notion, you know, that he can't quite hold up on a full workload. Maybe, you know, and no one's calling him injury prone, but a guy like picks up nicks and bruises. Do you see, have you caught any indication the Lions might change his usage this year? Or are they going to try to keep him like maybe with a 15 touch range? Or is there a chance maybe he can become more of like a 20 touch guy on a weekly basis?
I think ideally they want a 20 touch a week. I mean, Deuce Staley, one of the things he was talking about this offseason was saying, we're trying to teach him the difference between being hurt and pain and being injured. And I think that's, I mean, he showed those flashes last year. I never think he'll be that 25 to 30 carry a game type guy, but I mean, he did it that one week in Pittsburgh, had that giant, then came back and he had an even better week, but then he was hurt the next 5 weeks. So, I mean, it's really been hard for him to shake that injury tag, because it seems like every time he gets unleashed, he does come up. So I don't think there's a limit. I think the Lions would love to roll him out unlimited. You know, they love Jamal Williams, but I mean, you're crazy if you look at DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams.
Yeah.
Don't see the difference there. I mean, it just with the other pieces, his offense is, I mean, he should fit in very well with the things that he can bring that offense. But I think they'd love to just feed him the ball, passing game, running game. I mean, you saw it at times last season. I mean, you even saw it a bit when Campbell and Johnson took over the offense. It's just, can he handle it? I mean, once again, he looks great in camp, but I mean, that's three times in a row, three off seasons in a row. He's looked really good. It's just, you know, that's kind of what I've been saying is ideally the split share between Williams and Swift wouldn't be close. I mean, they're going to use Jamal Williams. They're going to use him. They love
the guy. Keep going. This is all really what we want to hear.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, they're going to use Jamal Williams. He's a short yardage guy. He's going to get some goal line looks. But, I mean, there's the way they talk. There could be some looks with Swift and Williams even on the field at the same time with what Swift can do out wide. And I think that's – you'd be crazy not to try that. But I just think that – ideally sitting here right now in mid-July that, I mean, Swift should be not the bell cow, but I mean, 20 touches a game with Williams as the clear second fiddle instead of the starting running back, like 12 weeks of the year. That was the weirdest part about the Anthony Lynn offense was that Jamal Williams got the first series of like six straight games. Like
it was hard not to notice.
Swift's not even in there for a snap until the second series of the game. And then they're already down 7-0 or 3-0. It's just,
there may have been some tilted Slack chats about that around fantasy land.
Well deserved.
I've heard some, you know, film breakdown talking about how Swift is not particularly good between the tackles. His rushing efficiency wasn't actually that great. Great as a receiver, but some of his rushing numbers, advanced stats, weren't particularly good. And so I'm just curious if, like, how you see the Lions coaches in terms of like how they're going to utilize him. Like, do they want to bring him up to speed in those areas and get him to the point where he's like a true all-around weapon that way? Or do you think they're going to maybe play to his strengths a little bit more and kind of use him kind of more like an Aaron Jones, Alvin Kamara, and have someone else like Williams, or even if Williams were to, you know, suffer an injury, they bring someone else in for that kind of more banger role. Just kind of curious how you think they view him.
I think they see him as a potential all-around guy. I mean, he definitely struggled between the tackles last season, and they're not wiping that from their memory, but I think they are looking at the fact that their projected starting five offensive line never played a single snap together. I mean, some of the times it was Matt Nelson who was playing defensive tackle at Iowa 2 years ago at right tackle. So it's just like, you're going to have Decker, Sewell on both sides with Ragnall, Big V, and Jonah Jackson back in the middle. I think they're going to give him a chance behind that line and see how it goes. I mean, Jamal Williams, like I said, he's going to be involved. He's going to get looks. Like, there's without question, he's going to get looks. I don't think it'll be 10 carries a game, but I think he will be involved in the offense. I just think that DeAndre Swift, they want him to be, and he should be, that all-around near three down, as near as you can get to a three down back in this era kind of guy.
So do you think that Jamal Williams, it sounds like you do think Jamal Williams is still like the unquestioned number two guy in the backfield, where he wasn't like terribly efficient. I mean, he's never been like the most efficient guy. He's more of like just like a really professional player, like always like makes his assignments, picks up the blitz, like is kind of like a coach's best friend type of running back. But it seemed like his efficiency dipped even more last year. I mean, do you think there's any opening for the guy like Jamar Jefferson maybe? Or I mean, even like Craig Reynolds produced a little bit last year. But do you think Jamal Williams is still the unquestioned number two?
Yeah, I do. And I think it's a pretty steep drop off between two and three. Honestly, you know, Jefferson, we'll see. You know, he's obviously shown flashes, and they were working Godwin Igwebuki into the mix last year, too. And
yeah, that's right. I was trying to remember who the third was.
And he was playing safety a year and a half ago. So, I mean, honestly, like you said, coach's best friend. I mean, Jamal Williams is the leader. One of the leaders on that offense. He's the leader in that running back room. He is unquestioned number two, you know, behind DeAndre Swift. And we'll see how much that is. But like you said, I mean, he was like, he wasn't terrible. He wasn't great. He wasn't really good. He wasn't really bad. It was like mediocre plus at times. Yeah, he's like dependable. You know what you're going to get. But I mean, yeah, like you said, he wasn't very efficient. And the more carries he got, the less efficient he was. And it's just, he wasn't very consistent in those short yardage and goal line areas where they're probably going to try to use him again this year. But, you know, I mean, like you said, he's available. He's a pro's pro. They know what they're going to get out of him each time. And they love him on that roster. So he's going to get looks too. And, but yeah, pretty steep drop off from 2 to 3 and 4.
That's good to know. Cause yeah, I mean, DeAndre Swift, cause a guy who's missed, I guess, 7 games in 2 years. It's important in fantasy who the backup is. Yeah. And it's good to know if a guy who's actually out there seeing them play, that there's still a pretty big difference between the second. Any final thoughts on the Lions and fantasy, Ben? Do we need to still keep an eye on people like Josh Reynolds, Khalif Raymond, or are they kind of back now and they're more natural? They're going to be role players, important players, but not the kind of people like vying for like amount of targets that's going to make them viable in fantasy.
You know, not really. It's all the guys we've really talked about. Cause I mean, I'm sure Reynolds and Raymond will get snaps, but it sounds like it's going to be a much, much more rotational type situation. I mean, shoot, Khalif Raymond, hats off to him last season, 5'8", running outside wide receiver at times. You know, this offense, it's about Goff. It's about those receivers, the top four, and until Jameis Williams gets back, and it's about Hockenson. I mean, you know, there's not really a sleeper because even if Swift goes down, you know what you're going to get out of Jamal Williams. He's not going to blow the brakes off anything. But, you know, Josh Reynolds is a guy, you know, if a wide receiver gets hurt before Williams is back, he's a guy that could probably step up into a emergency break glass in case of emergency situation. But you know with the Lions, you know who you should have pretty much. There's not too many sleepers. You know, even if a guy like Cephas makes the roster, what's he gonna offer? You know.
Yeah. I guess before we let you go, we should ask, what do you think, how will they use Jameson Williams once he's healthy, kind of feeling comfortable in the offense, kind of like has trust back his knee? Like, what do you think like an ideal rookie year week for the Lions coaching staff for Jameson Williams is going to be?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I think ideally he'd take over that Josh Reynolds role last year and just be that team's deep threat. You know, he's not going to do much other than that. You know, they probably want to – I get the vibe that they do want to take him along pretty slowly this first year, even if he is ready early. You know, that's the Sharp signing really timeline works well with that. The one-year deal, you draft a wide receiver, boom, year two, you got a rotational spot out of the way. But just getting him on the field and in that offense, I do think he'll be heavily involved when he's healthy, when he's 100%. I don't know if I see Shark and St. Brown and Hockenson being more valuable than him, but I mean, you saw what that guy did last season at Alabama. You've seen his speed. You've seen the way
he's ridiculous.
I've seen his gunner highlights. I mean, I think like they're going to like use him. They're going to
very high T.
They're just, yeah, it's just, I think they love the versatility of these guys. They're going to Shark and Reynolds and Williams and St. Brown are going to be vertical threats. They're going to be short threats. They're going to be intermediate threats. I mean, the big talking point has been, we're going to let these guys do what they do well. We're going to figure out what these guys' strengths are. And that's what we're going to like facilitate to. And that's the biggest difference between the Anthony Lynn offense and the Campbell Johnson offense. It was like when somebody got hot, they explored why that was happening. They explored how much more they could do with that. And that's kind of hyping up Jameson Williams a little bit. They're going to figure out ways to use this guy. I mean, season long leagues, there's not a lot to get excited about, but I mean, keeper leagues, I mean, this dude, shoot.
That approach is hyping up everyone a little bit. I think that's exciting that they are actually playing to their player strengths.
Right. Yeah, I know.
Always big when a coaching staff decides to do that.
Hey man, I just lived through the Patricia years and they were shoving squares into round holes and just
that's Patriots offensive coordinator, Matt Patricia.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Not sure that's been confirmed, but it's looking far too close to reality. Even if it's not reality, it's gotten too close.
It's him or Joe Judge, and I don't know which is worse.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's probably just going to be his son, Steve Belichick, the next great NFL offensive coordinator. Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us. Excellent stuff on the Lions beat from Ben Raven, nimlive.com. And yeah, as evidenced by the fact we just talked about the Lions for 30 minutes, it's becoming a more exciting team. You know, maybe it won't be like blockbuster and redraft fantasy this year, but like there's like now a handful of truly notable guys. And that just was not the case last year. It's DeAndre Swift and TJ Hockenson and just a very exciting team. And hopefully an exciting season for you. Because the Lions, I don't know if you caught wind of, I mean, they're getting kind of hyped like fantasy circles. Like they're kind of like one of the teams people are like pondering the over on their over under. is like one of the kind of like there's every year, you know, there's a few teams that kind of like break out a year earlier and expect them. They're getting some of that hype. So best of luck to you based on the beat. Did you get an entertaining season?
I've never seen a December game where they weren't in last place, so it would be kind of nice just while on the beat. But no, thank you for having me, and hit me up anytime.
No, thanks so much. Yeah, we'll do it again sometime. And so, Ben, yeah, awesome stuff from Ben Raven. We will talk again. And now, Karain and I got to talk about the rest of this division. And, you know, the Chicago Bears are in this division, Pat. That's been rumored. People are saying that they're in this division. The Minnesota Vikings.
Allegedly.
The Green Bay Packers. Should we start with the Minnesota Vikings? Does that sound good to you?
Sure. Or should I feel we, like you wanted to start with the Bears there, and then you just, like, pulled out. You just couldn't do it.
Or should we just end the show?
Let's just end the show.
I mean, so first off, what are you, Karain, expecting from Kevin O'Connell? Like, we think we're all kind of hoping for like this Rams light system where, you know, it's not like, so I just did the Rams preview for the site. And as we know, like the Rams, it's not exactly like passing game utopia. I think they had like the 14th highest pass rate in the NFL last year, which is, you know, above average, but barely. But, like, they're the classic, just everything about their offense is optimized, whereas Mike Zimmer's offense was, like, the least optimized in the entire NFL. And just, what can we reasonably expect, you think, from Kevin O'Connell's offense in 2022?
Yeah, the Rams are interesting because they got more run-heavy down the stretch last year. We saw Matthew Stafford throwing interceptions, throwing some pick sixes, and it seemed like they were starting to lose faith a little bit and, you know, kind of protecting him with more running plays. They're not a Buccaneers Chiefs style offense. They're not even like a Bills style offense in terms of their commitment to the pass. I think maybe they're more like the Packers or something. We should expect these types of offense to be pass first, but not necessarily pass heavy. But when you compare things to a Mike Zimmer offense, it's not just about the play calling, the pass run split. It's about like the types of personnel that we're going to see and like the amount of routes that we're going to see on a given play, kind of the overall like play style that we're going to get. The Vikings only ran 11 personnel last year on 44% of their snaps. They were in 21, which is two backs, one tight end in 20% of their snaps. They had 12 personnel, two tight ends on 13% of their snaps. They had 22 personnel, which is two backs, two tight ends, on 9% of their snaps. And in these kind of heavy packages, we weren't always seeing both tight ends, both running backs run routes. So on a given play, there's not as many pass catchers. Like literally, there's just not as many pass catchers on the field. So I think one thing we should see with the Rams, who ran with this Rams offensive style, I mean, the Rams last year ran 11 personnel on 85% of their snaps. So almost twice as much as the Vikings did. I think that should really help the Vikings, should help Cousins. He's like going to have an extra wide receiver on the field, you know, almost twice as much as he did under Zimmer. He's going to have better options to throw the ball, and they're just going to have more options on most plays for Cousins to look to. So the types of passing plays that we should see, I think will just be like better, higher quality passing plays. For the most part. So I think that's maybe like a slightly underrated shift that we're going to see in this offense.
So what you're saying is Justin Jefferson just going to immediately set the NFL receiving record. Is that do you think that's a realistic expectation, Pat? Because if Cooper Kupp under Kevin O'Connell can have the second best wide receiver season of all time, I think it stands to reason Justin Jefferson will have the best wide receiver season of all time. I don't know why I'm going so long with this joke, but really want it to happen.
Is it a joke?
Yeah, I mean, that is the kind of thing. Is it a joke? Because the other day I'm like, could Justin Jefferson have like a 2,200 yard season in this offense? I was thinking this in my head and didn't share this thought with anybody. I think I actually thought 2,500 yards. So there's a reason I didn't say it out loud.
I am taking Justin Jefferson almost every time over Ja'Marr Chase because Ja'Marr Chase in these drafts is a sort of fantasy specific point, but Ja'Marr Chase is almost always the 105 right now, but he will occasionally follow the 106. I've gotten him as late as the 107, and you're not getting Jefferson there at all. So you can still, as long as you're just like, I'm taking Chase every time he's available, once Jefferson's gone, you'll probably get pretty good overweight on Chase, and you can, and then taking Jefferson consistently over Chase allows you to get a ton of Jefferson as well. And Jefferson to me does have the type of setup where he could just explode, like overall wide receiver one, you know, comfortably over Cup type of season, depending on, you know, maybe Cup's target share declines by 3-4%, which would be almost expected based on how ridiculous he was last year. But yeah, I mean, he's got this setup where Adam Thielen, KJ Osborne, I think have to be respected somewhat by defenses. You can't completely ignore them, but at the same time, they're not coming for Justin Jefferson's targets. They're not coming for the offensive design. Like, you know, like if Kevin O'Connell's staying up late to design passing plays, I'm pretty sure most of them are going to have Justin Jefferson as the focal point. So he just, I think, could have a massive target share season in an offense that's just way more efficient through the air and then also has more passing volume. And Cousins is, you know, solid enough to facilitate that type of season. So I'm very bullish on Justin Jefferson. And even if he's just Justin Jefferson in an offense that passes more and it improves a bit in terms of its overall efficiency, which it, I think, should, he doesn't need any kind of like special Cooper Kupp role. He's Justin Jefferson. Like, he just needs to be in a slightly better offense and he could have just a monster season.
So, I mean, along those lines, if we're expecting just a better overall, which of course we're expecting a better overall passing environment with someone from Sean McVay's offense coming to run the show, Adam Thielen, he's the wide receiver 34 right now at underdog. Is that too, are we underestimating an aging Adam Thielen, or does he seem like someone where the bottom is kind of falling out? And even if we're expecting a better passing game environment, should we not get too excited about Adam Thielen this year?
I'm having trouble generating a ton of enthusiasm for Adam Thielen, partly because if we're seeing more 11 personnel, which we will, we just will. So that means Thielen's now competing with KJ Osborne more, you know, or Amir Smith-Marset maybe, but a wide receiver is the point, as opposed to like a second tight end. And they didn't have Irv Smith for much of last year. So, you know, the tight end competition for targets, not super strong. I think that probably hurts Thielen more than Jefferson. Because again, I think Jefferson, I mean, he's got this versatility. He was used in the slot in college. He was used outside at LSU in his sophomore season. He was obviously, he's shown he can do everything at the NFL level. So he just has so many paths. It's like, who cares what personnel they're using? Justin Jefferson is going to get his. But I think it could have an effect on Adam Thielen if he's having to compete with other wide receivers a bit more than he used to.
That's a good point. So then who's the third pass catcher? Could it be KJ Osborne actually, if we're having, you know, consistently more three receivers on the field, or could it be a returning Irv Smith? Irv Smith is still somehow only 23 years old. I missed the entire season.
Is that a lie?
He's turning 24 in August, so it's like half a lie.
Okay.
But he's still only 23 years old. Is there any reason to get excited about KJ Osborne, or should we get back excited about Irv Smith? It was only a meniscus injury. It wasn't like an ACL, like a totally destroyed knee last year. It is strange to miss an entire year with a meniscus. I mean, what's your read on that? Is who the third Vikings pass catcher should be, who that priority should be for fantasy managers?
I have not been as bullish on Irv Smith as the market. I don't mind it, but it does feel like, you know, the bull case is basically he's going to be in a Tyler Higbee role and play every snap, but he goes like three rounds ahead of Tyler Higbee. I'm like, what? You know, I guess like there's some additional upside that we're baking in because he's this young player that we were excited about at one point. But I don't know, it feels a little strange to me. Like, I'd rather tack on KJ Osborne, who's, I think, usually a little bit later. I'm not drafting a ton of either guy, but yeah, I think mixing in both makes sense. And we should probably be pretty open-minded to it being either guy. Like, I don't have a strong stand on, you know, if it's going to be Osborne or Smith. I think if you're stacking the Vikings, you know, you should be adding, you know, one or two of those guys, because again, I do think that we should see a bit more spread concepts, a bit less of a really concentrated target tree.
So then Dalvin Cook, Pat, been a top three or four running back basically his entire NFL career. We know, like, again, we talk about this Rams system. They actually like to run. They just like to run smarter, not harder. Do we still consider Dalvin Cook a safe, like, top five running back? You know, he's getting older. The reps have piled up. He has missed time over the years with a variety of minor injuries. But do you think like any potential like decrease in like raw volume could just be offset by better overall usage? And do you still view him as like a clear cut top four or five, maybe even top three or four back in fantasy this year?
Yeah, I like him going at the end of the first round in these best ball drafts. At first, I was sort of like a little skeptical because I wasn't sure if we were going to see any kind of suspension risk with him. It seems like that's not really all that.
Really, like, weirdly, no, that just like disappeared. I'm not sure if that was like settled or what, but like that situation has like disappeared off the face of the earth. And that has been a very strange thing with Dalvin Cook's offseason. Unless I missed an update, it seems like there has been absolutely no updates on his off-the-field issues.
The last time I researched it, it seemed unlikely that he was going to get suspended. But do your own research on that because I could be off there. But
yeah, it's just been weird. It's been hard to find any information on that. So it's like, yeah, like full disclosure, it's been hard to find any information on that situation whatsoever. And it seems like maybe it has just like disappeared. And I know that sounds crazy, but like there's been no update from that, from like anyone's lawyers or from like any DA's offices or anything. It just seems like there were supposed to be some court dates that those dates came and went and there was no updates whatsoever. So it just seems like that situation has somehow resolved itself.
If we're getting the full season from Cook, then I do think he's a value at ADP because, you know, you're smarter, not harder. Comment I think is dead on. Like, we're going to see a Rams offense that should be more efficient. It should pass more. Cook has been a guy that has been utilized not a ton in the passing game, but I think, you know, similar to like a Todd Gurley in the Rams offense, like he should be getting screens. He should be, you know, incorporated to an extent in the passing game. He won't be like a true three down guy, but, you know, kind of similar to Jonathan Taylor type of role. And you know,
we like those kind of roles.
That's pretty nice. Yeah. We don't want Derrick Henry, but we can live without, you know, a full kind of Christian McCaffrey level three down workhorse role. As long as Dalvin Cook is as efficient on the ground as he's been. And this is a smart coaching staff. Like, I don't think they're going to completely change up the rushing style from, you know, the Zimmer offense. This kind of has like similar, it's a similar tree of coaches. They're totally fine with the outside zone type of schemes. So, yeah, I think Dalvin Cook should be quite efficient on the ground and will probably benefit from the offense shifting to the pass. Maybe we get some higher scoring games. Maybe we get the Vikings going out there with the goal of scoring 30 instead of the goal of, you know, holding the other team to 14 or whatever.
So are you convinced that Alexander Mattison is still the clear-cut backup? I mean, I think he is. Nothing's really changed that, right? Is he still the plug and play number two for the Vikings?
This is a guy I have not been drafting a ton of, and I believe he was my highest owned running back in best ball last year. So I'm this isn't like an anti-Madison take, but it feels like he's more expensive, I believe, than he was in drafts last season. But we now have a change in coaching staff, and they did draft Ty Chandler, and I wouldn't be shocked if Cook were to go down, it's a committee. Like, it's a rare situation where you have a running back go down and then the guy behind him gets everything. And that's what made Alexander Mattison so good. He's not a particularly talented runner. He's not bad, but he's like, I think probably kind of a Josh Jacobsian type of running back. You know, he can kind of do everything pretty well. He's fairly elusive, doesn't really hit big plays, decent in the passing game, not that like, nothing special in the passing game, but certainly capable there. And so I do think he's the type of guy that might be susceptible to being in a committee under a new coaching staff, under a new GM who just brought in a cheap running back, but they did bring in another running back. So I think we should probably be like, you know, at least open to the possibility that he is not an every down player if Cook goes down, because the people that were doing that are gone. And, you know, there is a little bit more competition now than there was.
That's a good way. Yeah, that's pretty good. And Madison, he would get those opportunities. He had a few good games, but he had a few disappointing games too. Which I guess it's a tough situation to all of a sudden just go from being a backup to the every down back. But he had a few duds. It's like the plug and play Dalvin Cook fill in too. So I guess maybe that's important to remember that he didn't like hit a home run every single time he made a start for Dalvin Cook. Not that you can really judge a guy on that, but
I'll also say the Rams seem to have, you know, they wanted to have a single back, you know, a single lead back, it seemed like. Like once they seem like they kind of shifted towards Sony Michel over Daryl Henderson. And you know, that didn't devolve into a committee. They eventually just sort of replaced the Daryl Henderson role with Sony Michel. And then when Cam Akers came back, they kind of like rushed him into a lead back role. So I do think Madison has a pretty good chance of still being the clear cut backup. I just don't think it's quite as obvious as maybe the market does. So I generally just wait for a discount on him on any drafts and try to get some exposure, but I'm not hammering him like I was last year.
Do we have any parting thoughts on the Vikings? I think we just hammered the Vikings pretty well there, didn't we?
I mean, I'm excited to watch Justin Jefferson. Yeah, Justin Jefferson this year is going to be fun.
Well, it's funny. The Vikings are the second most interesting team in this division. Well, I guess the Packers are maybe more interesting from a chaos perspective, but we'll be right back after this to discuss the Packers and the fourth team in the NFC North. They are escaping me because they're not worth talking about.
Do summer projects your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can make the most of summer grilling and dig into gardening. Plus, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like power tools and storage to tackle any last-minute garage project. Summer your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select and stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports app powered by PointsBet, to go download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands by predicting what will happen in Major League Baseball, on the PGA Tour, and on the NASCAR circuit. We also have a special contest on Tuesday and Thursdays called Battle of the Bets, where you can agree or disagree with our experts for a shot to collect some cash. So yeah, Pat, the Packers are kind of, for like, you know, weird, bad reasons, like the most fascinating team in this division right now, because we just have no idea what's going on with the Packers offense, really. We don't know how the receiver core is going to shake out. I feel like we have even like weirdly little clarity with the backfield, just with how many passes A.J. Dillon was catching last year and how, you know, he profiles as a goal line type back, even though Aaron Jones has always been a good goal line back. But we'll get to the backfield in a second. We'll start with the receivers. You've been drafting a ton this summer. Which of, if any, of the Packers wide receivers have you been prioritizing?
I'm not really that excited about the Packers. It seems like, and I, this could be a really big blind spot for me, you know? So I'm, and Kyle was on, this isn't the wide receivers, but last week on the podcast, Kyle was talking about how he's drafting a ton of Aaron Jones, who I hadn't been drafting quite as much of. So that got me a little bit more bullish on him. But in terms of the wide receivers, like Lazard seems like he's probably in line to be the top guy, but the market is pretty bullish on him. He's wide receiver 40 on Underdog right now. He's going ahead of Brandon Ayuk, going ahead of Kadarius Toney, Christian Kirk, my guy Treylon Burks. I'm loving this Burks discount right now. It's tough to, like, I don't know. That feels expensive to me for Alan Lazard, a player that we're not like super psyched about his talent. So Watson is a bit more appealing because he's cheaper. But he also is in a pocket where, like, Garrett Wilson is so cheap right now. I'm going back to the well on Rondale Moore. I've got a ton of Denver stacks, so I'll tack on Tim Patrick there. You know, so there's other options within that range that I often find myself getting more excited about. There's also, if you're in need of running backs there, Ramondre Stevenson tends to go in that range. So I haven't been drafting a ton of Christian Watson, but that's probably the guy that I should be mixing in more, or the guy that I'll be kind of quicker to get my exposure back up closer to even with the field on.
Yeah, I mean, so that was good. So at ADP, you're most comfortable with Christian Watson because, yeah, wide receiver 40, just I feel like you're drafting Alan Lazard as has absolute peak. Or is it Christian Watson? He's the wide receiver 53 right now, an underdog. There's still like plenty of untapped upside, I feel like, in that ADP. And I think we've dabbled in Sammy Watkins, Trutherism. He's the wide receiver 74 right now. I mean, there's definitely upside for him to outproduce that ADP, but we just know what it's like to draft Sammy Watkins. So much pain, so much hurt all the time. And
you get a good week one sometimes.
Yeah, you know, occasionally. Would you rather have Sammy Watkins as the wide receiver 74 or Randall Cobb as the wide receiver 40?
Randall Cobb is the wide receiver 40.
Excuse me, sorry. Alan Lazard, excuse me, is the wide receiver 40. I'm getting my very mediocre Packers depth receivers mixed up, or should be depth receivers, I say.
I like Sammy Watkins better. Watkins kind of has had this discount because there was like the report that, you know, he's not a lock to make the team. No one wants to draft this year's Breshad Perriman. So, you know, you're definitely not as psyched to draft Sammy Watkins, but man, he actually is cheap. He's still like not cheap enough for me. Like I prefer he was like a true kind of just like tack on in the last rounds kind of guy. But I don't know. I'm drafting a lot of Will Fuller and Julio Jones, and I'm hoping that's my Packers exposure because those guys are going, you know, several rounds after Watkins.
Randall Cobb, by the way, is the wide receiver 99.
I have drafted him, though. I actually think Randall Cobb might be the best Packers wide receiver at ADP. And like sometimes they pull quotes from this. Don't pull this one. Don't put this on the internet.
Yeah,
but I do think.
Don't quote Crane on that.
No, it's not a quotable quote. But the Randall Cobb thing, I mean, like he is free, you know, like in the DraftKings 20 round best ball drafts, like you can tack him on in the last round, like completely free. And would you really be shocked if Aaron Rodgers just threw a ton to Randall Cobb this year out of the slot? And, you know, that he kind of didn't get on the same page with Christian Watson for much of the year. And Alan Lazard continued to be like fine, you know, and Sammy Watkins mixes in and everyone kind of, it's just sort of spread out, hard to predict, but Randall Cobb like inevitably gets six targets. I could see it, and he's free.
Man, I don't. Yeah, maybe we should just take that out of the podcast, even in context. I don't even know if you want those comments contextualized.
Pat is like legit considering firing me. No bits. Just you actually are fired now.
I mean, is there anything with Amari Rodgers? Anything there? I mean, he's supposedly in the best shape of his life. He never got on Aaron Rodgers' nice list last year. They just didn't seem to be a fan. Do you see any reason to be taking Amari Rodgers flyers?
None. And I think partially because I just think Cobb is going to play over Amari Rodgers. The exciting guy here, the fun way to play this late round dart throw selection is Romeo Doubs. All right, Romeo Doubs, day three pick for the Packers. He's a deep threat. He showed pretty well in minicamp. And I also wouldn't be shocked if, you know, Christian Watson, this super raw player from an FCS school, has trouble getting on the same page with Rodgers early in his career. I mean, we thought Davante Adams was a bust. We thought, like, the fantasy community was loudly calling Davante Adams a bust because it's sometimes hard to get on the same page with Rodgers. The precision needed to have that chemistry with him, I think it's a pretty high bar. And so, you know, maybe Dubs is able to develop that with Rodgers. Rodgers certainly seems like he really has his guys. Like, if you can kind of earn his trust, I think it matters more than almost any other quarterback in the league. So going ultra cheap with some of these Packers options is appealing to me for that reason, just because there's so much uncertainty. I don't feel as confident about the talent projections as I do with some other uncertain receiving cores. Like, you know, I think the Chiefs guys, it's easier to get excited about the talent of some of the other guys that aren't going really, really cheap. So yeah, I think Romeo Doubs, if you're thinking about Amari Rodgers, I would just take Romeo Doubs instead.
That seems like a sensible take to me. So your Romeo's the wide receiver 100 on Underdog. Amari Rodgers didn't appear to have an ADP unless I didn't use Control F correctly. It appears Amari Rodgers does not have an ADP, and it sounds like you agree with that.
I mean, Rodgers last year basically got a look at, you know, what they had done in the draft and was like, cool, give me Randall Cobb. And sorry about your wasted third round
pick. Yeah, that's a tough scene. The backfield, Aaron Jones is the RB9 right now, an Underdog. He's A.J. Dillon's like right on the RB2-3 borderline, RB24, 25. I mean, how do you forecast this backfield? Because like I kind of hinted at earlier in the show, like things got weird down the stretch last year. Where, like A.J. Dillon like caught more passes than he did in college and like high school combined. Just no one really saw that coming. We thought, you know, a really safe thing it seems like to do for Aaron Jones after Davante Adams leaves would be to forecast an increase in targets. But we kind of expect that every year with Aaron Jones. Like, how is this guy not catching, you know, like 50 to 60 passes every year? And I just – do you have a feel for how, like, this touch delineation might work out between Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon? Do you think I might get more, like, sensible this year where, like, you know, Aaron Jones is, like, clearly the primary pass catcher, maybe still the primary goal line back, but what is your feel on the Packers' backfield?
The Aaron Jones splits are tough because, you know, basically any time they haven't had – Davante Adams, they've really leaned into Aaron Jones as like their primary pass catcher. And Kyle was pointing out, like, you know, they maybe could just do that for the whole year because there's a chance that no one really steps up, which is pretty interesting. But it's tough for me to, like, that's a really, really interesting bull case. But I guess I'm also skeptical that that bull case plays out because Aaron Jones has never really been this high volume receiver. You know, he's never had 75 targets in a career in a season. So, you know, we could get a completely different usage profile from Jones than we have over, you know, a typical season because they use him like they tended to use him with Davante Adams out. But I also think that, you know, you did see AJ Dillon's routes increase over the season. And I don't think, like, it's one of those things where when Aaron Jones is on the field and he's running a route, he's so much more likely to get targeted on that route than A.J. Dillon. But you could also see A.J. Dillon forcing like a true split, and there's just less opportunities for Aaron Jones to be out there running those routes and get the targets, which would take away some of that really, really exciting upside for Aaron Jones to just get, you know, the crazy high target volume that would turn him into an absolute league winner. So I kind of view this as a split. I also think that the Packers will probably be pretty good. And we could see them running a little bit more than we're used to. And maybe they're just kind of a balanced team. They've got this AJ Dillon hammer. They're not super worried about like overusing him because they're going to be spelling him frequently with Aaron Jones. And they're kind of playing from ahead a lot. They've always been a very, very slow team. The Packers are slow every single season consistently. I don't think anything's changing there. I think if anything, we could see them maybe get a little slower since they don't feel as good about their passing game weapons. So I think both backs are probably priced correctly. I haven't had a ton of either guy right now, although, like I said, I'll probably be drafting Jones a little bit more. But also, I think completely fading them would be a bit scary.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, the fear that you can is that they could just become like interchangeable almost. I mean, it would be crazy for AJ Dillon to like approach Aaron Jones's level of targets, but I already thought it was crazy how many targets he got last year. So I just feel like we can't quite assume how that's going to shake out. But yeah, I think I would still prioritize Jones in the RB1-2 borderline over AJ Dillon on the RB2-3 borderline because it just makes too much sense for the Packers. Like, they have to increase Aaron Jones's targets, right? And I just think that's kind of like a pretty good trump card between the two, but that I'm also scared, and I just don't know how they're actually going to do it.
Yeah, and like Dillon ran over at least 10 routes in every game from week 9 on until their playoff loss. He only ran 8 routes there, and that was one of those games where we saw Jones spike up. He ran 26 routes in that game he had 10 targets in that game, caught 9 of them for 129 yards. So to me, it's like, it's strange because it seems like when they want to, they just turn Aaron Jones into this absolute like game-changing weapon, but then they don't always deploy him that way. So it's a very tough projection because like, if they just decided like, okay, yeah, he's Christian McCaffrey now, we're just going to use him like Christian McCaffrey, or Alvin Kamara and kind of, you know, the peak Alvin Kamara role. I don't think like anything would stop that from just rolling. Like, you know, like Aaron Jones is a great talent. He's a little older than we prefer. He turns 28 in December, but, you know, certainly looked like he had plenty left last year. So if they were to just decide to do that, he could crush. In some ways, it reminds me a little bit of Austin Eckler last year, where we like hemmed and hawed all offseason about like if he was going to get a goal line role. But there was no doubt what would happen if he did get a goal line role. If he got a goal line role, he was going to crush. And he did get a goal line role and he crushed. So, you know, I think Jones is ultimately the guy that I'm probably going to make sure I'm overweight on, even though I haven't been to start. I've been like probably a little under even with the field to start. Going to fix that because he's the guy where it's like someone else needs to make the right decision. And then if they do, he can really crush ADP.
Makes sense. Good talk there on Aaron Jones. Not sure if really anything makes sense with the Bears or if there's a good talk to be had on the Bears, but we'll start with Justin Fields, who we know has that dual threat upside and was not allowed to tap into it very much by the former coaching staff. Maddeningly few designed runs. Like the rushing production he did have seemed to be him just scrambling. Now the new coaching staff, the new front office, already rather infamously, they didn't try to build around him this offseason. It seems like they're hunting for the number one overall pick. But despite like that kind of dismal environment, kind of like dismal setup, you know, not a vote of confidence, do we still have, is there any QB1 hope for Justin Fields? We know can be a very, very dynamic runner. And we know that's where the money is in fantasy football.
Yeah, I think like where he's going, you have to have some exposure because he scrambled at such a high rate last year. Like he's willing to run. And they look like a pretty talented runner. He's really fast. So if he's willing to do that, and he's probably going to have to do that a fair amount given his weapons and protection, then, you know, he can pick up a lot of value with his legs. But at the same time, like, I wish I could really be very bullish on Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields is just getting, this isn't fair. Like, I'm actually outraged. Outraged about what the Bears are doing here. Because I actually think like maybe one of the, like the wide receiver situation is so bad that it's actually like, drawing cover for the Bears in some ways because their offensive line might actually be an even bigger, like that might be a bigger screw up for the Bears than what they're doing with the wide receivers. They have this second round pick, Tevin Jenkins, who it seems like is not a starter. And he's really struggled last year. And basically, you know, you're looking at these projections for their offensive line this year, he's penciled in.
He is
as a starter at left tackle. Reports of minicamp was that he was playing as the second string right tackle. So like, I think they're looking at like a fourth rounder protecting Fields' blind side here. Like this was a really bad offensive line last year and it might be worse this year. So I mean, when you have a quarterback who struggled as a passer, like badly as a rookie, and then his wide receivers get worse and his offensive line gets worse. It's not good. I mean, this could get real. I think the Bears could be horrible, like just painful to watch, you know, and I hope not. Like, I'd love to see Justin Fields overcome this.
Byron Pringle age 28 breakout, maybe.
Yeah, we have to cover these games. Like, I don't root for bad football anywhere in the league. You know, I want only good football out there. But I mean, I think it could be like really, really bad. And even, you know, like Velus Jones is a very strange third round pick where, you know, he's looks like a very strong special teams player.
They've been hyping him too. They haven't even like been trying to like hide him. They've been like hyping him.
They got to hype somebody, you know, but he's not even, I don't know. Is he going to be like a refined enough player to really provide deep shots for Fields. It seems like if you're building an offense around Fields, you'd be accentuating the deep ball. And, you know, they do have Darnell Mooney who can win downfield, but I don't think Mooney is a complete enough player to be able to handle a ton of defensive attention and still be delivering a ton of big plays downfield. And they just don't really have anything else. And like Byron Pringle, you know, I personally think we're likely to see him get exposed as, you know, yeah, you were okay when Patrick Mahomes was throwing the ball, but like, this feels like Lionsy, you know, and Lionsy last year, obviously, but I don't know there's an Amon-Ra St. Brown here to emerge. I don't think we're going to get a Velus Jones turning into Amon-Ra St. Brown down the stretch. Darnell Mooney would kind of be maybe a TJ Hockenson in this metaphor where it's like, I don't think he's gonna be able to handle the defensive attention that he's about to get. Cole Kmet is maybe the kind of interesting way to play this, because I think the defenses will probably be more concerned with Mooney, and you could see like a lot of dump offs to Kmet. Is like, he's going to run all the routes and he's like capable enough that he should be, you know, a safety valve where maybe Fields doesn't feel comfortable looking at his wide receiver two, wide receiver three.
Well, yeah. And kind of like picking up on mentioning TJ Hockenson, maybe Cole Kmet could be like TJ Hockenson last year, whereas unlike TJ Hockenson, at least Kmet does have a Darnell Mooney to draw some defensive attention. Mm-hmm. And so Cole Kmet is the tight end 14 right now, which is pretty high for a guy, you know, who lost snaps to Jimmy Graham, et cetera. But do you see tight end one upside? Would you be comfortable with Cole Kmet as like a low end tight end one? If you say you punted tight end in your redraft league, or is Cole Kmet already kind of at the outer limit of what you think his ADP should be?
He feels about fair, because it's like it's a volume based play. You're not that excited about Cole Kmet's talent. I don't think he's had an okay start to his career. Second round pick, got on the field right away as a rookie, earned a full-time role to close out the season. And now this year, I think we'll be in like an every down role. So, you know, kind of in like a Gabriel Davis way, where it's like, you know, the expectations for this type of player, in Davis's case, a day three wide receiver, Kmet's case, a tight end, which we know can sometimes take 2-3 years to really even get on the field all the time. Now would be the time where it's like, all right, if he's really talented, this is the year we'll find out. And maybe it's not a big deal that he wasn't earning a ton of targets as a sophomore or whatever. But at the same time, he's never flashed that ability. He's never flashed any kind of strong target rate, strong targets per out run, anything like that. And so I think the more likely scenario is that he's a perfectly capable, you know, again, kind of a Tyler Higbee type of dude who's going to run a lot of routes, you know, kind of a Dawson Knox type of guy, Dalton Schultz, like one of the many tight ends who's a perfectly capable starter, but is probably more dependent on the quality of the overall offense and not going to be able to dictate, you know, making big plays and actually being like a force from the tight end position as a receiver. I think the guys who can do that are, it's a pretty rare group. And I'm not sure Kmet is ever going to be one of those guys. At the same time, he could be, you know, and there's targets available. So I don't hate the play at tight end 14. I've mixed him in, but not like a super strong target for me.
I do think he will exceed last year's touchdown total. Do you remember what it was?
It's got to be pretty low.
It was zero. Okay. So I think Cole Kmet will exceed last, because 60 catches for 612 yards. If he had scored like 5 or 6 touchdowns, like that probably would have made him a tight end one last year, right? Like, you catch 60 balls as a tight end, you're kind of usually in that tight end one mix. But he scored 0 touchdowns, and that's a big, big problem.
I mean, like, Austin Hooper had a strong year at tight ends when he was with Matt Ryan and the Falcons. Like, volume can do a lot for a tight end. And normally, I personally trying to figure out which tight ends I think are potentially like breakouts from a talent perspective and go overweight those guys. But at a certain point, like, the realistic options for those players are gone already, because there's only so many guys that really can be that guy. So, you know, I don't think Kmet's overpriced, because he does have a strong path to a volume based low end tight end one season for sure.
Yeah. And that volume should stay there. And Jimmy Graham, I joked about it, but he is gone. Like, Jimmy Graham will not be there to command red zone targets for whatever reason. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Cole, even if I think you broke down the player perfectly, where he's going to be really dependent on his offensive environment. But I think there'll probably be just enough volume there for him to I would say maybe crash the top 12, and maybe I would say probably crash the top 12, because that touchdown rate's like flukily low for a tight end that's getting almost 100 targets. I mean, usually that kind of target's going to get some red zone looks. So, yeah, I don't know why. For some reason, I just talked myself into Cole Kmet live on the air. Darnell Mooney, you mentioned. We'll close the show talking about Darnell Mooney. He's the wide receiver 28 right now, an underdog. Ideally, he would be the number two receiver on a good team, maybe even a number three on like a great team. But he's the number one on a bad team. Do you think there'll be enough volume there for him to be wide receiver 28? Or will the offensive environment just be so bad that Darnell Mooney's just kind of not a value like at any price? What do you think about Darnell Mooney and his midsummer ADP?
He does strike me as a little overpriced. It seems like we're projecting volume to get him to this level. And I don't want to be betting on, you know, a volume play on the Bears offense this year. I've talked about how bad I think it could get there. And I don't think Mooney's that good. Like, I don't think Mooney's bad, but you summed it up perfectly. Like, you know, in an amazing offense, he'd probably be a number three wide receiver. And, you know, again, like the defensive attention is probably going to be an issue here. I think they'll move him around the formation. You know, he's playing in the slot some last season. Like, I don't think he'll just be kind of running empty deep routes. Like, I do think that he will be kind of a true number one in the sense that he'll be used in on the outside, on the inside, on a variety of depths. And, you know, he'll be the first read, I'm sure, a ton. But, you know, you're betting on him right now over Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's wide receiver 29. You know, Chris Godwin's fallen behind him, which makes some sense because of the injury. But certainly when we're thinking about who we'd rather have in the fantasy playoffs, I think it's pretty easily Chris Godwin. Elijah Moore, who's got some concerns about, you know, maybe how many routes he's going to run.
Probably rather have Mooney than Elijah Moore, I guess. But
you could talk me into that. You could talk me into that. But I think, you know, Devonta Smith, who, like, I don't know. To me, like, I'm not sure I want him over guys like where I think Moore and Smith could be, like, much better than Mooney as players. And so, you know, he feels like a little overpriced to me. I think maybe more in the kind of wide receiver 33, 34 range is where he'd start to feel a little bit better. And you're getting to bet then on, you know, okay, Fields does somehow overcome it all. And you now you have this guy's number one weapon at a pretty nice discount. But there's some guys whose ceilings I like better than Darnell Mooney. But we can't let you close this pod out, Pat, without hearing from DeMont Nation.
Oh, gosh. Well, I was going to say, you talk about Darnell Mooney moving all over the formation. Velus Jones, by the way, lining up in the slot in the backfield, apparently. Yeah. So keep an eye on Velus. But, I mean, David Montgomery, that's the final year of his rookie contract. I mean, classic. They're going to ride him to the wheels fall off, probably. It's bad. And bad offensive environment, really bad offensive line. But the Bears kind of strike me as one of those teams. Like, every year there's one or two teams where, like, game script doesn't really matter. Like, game flow doesn't really – they just, like, have no choice but to run. Do you think that's the case with DeMont? And, I mean, would you feel comfortable with DeMont as your RB2?
I don't feel comfortable with DeMont ever. I'm pretty
– That's fair.
I'm not sure I've drafted him.
He's the RB20 on Underdog right now.
Yeah, just not – no, just not interested.
Do you think Khalil Herbert will, like, kind of eat in maybe to his workload if he's not in this new brain trust long-term plans? Or do you think it's more likely that, yeah, they just give DeMont – it's a rebuilding year. They're just trying to get the number one pick. You think they just give DeMont as many touches as he can handle?
I guess that's possible, but they're talking about changing up the run scheme a little bit, which is never a great sign for an incumbent running back who's purely a volume play. They also drafted this guy, Treston Ebner, I believe in the sixth round. So, like, maybe that'll mean absolutely nothing. Could be a practice squad guy ultimately. But Ebner's a little bit interesting as a kind of a speed back pass catcher. Pretty efficient on, you know, somewhat small role in college. But that is a potential, you know, Nyheim Hines, Tariq Cohen-y type of guy getting added to the mix, which obviously would not be good at all for a volume-based play on a bad offense. And then I just think Khalil Herbert is good. And I'll occasionally get, these film-based takes, even though I'm like very much kind of a numbers-based guy. But like the last time I felt this strongly about, like, I don't care what the numbers say, I'm pretty sure this guy's good, it was D'Ernest Johnson. And now in my head, I'm just like, I don't have many film takes, but when I do, I'm right.
D'Ernest Johnson.
Khalil Herbert. So I'm feeling good about Khalil Herbert, but Khalil Herbert, I was drafting a lot of at one point, and then I was like, are you really going to be super heavy a two-down running back on a team whose offensive line you're terrified of? And then who's also not the starter. Yeah, backup running back. Yeah, so I'm not pounding Khalil Herbert anymore, but I do think like he's maybe a mild concern for Montgomery, who Montgomery's again, like, he's fine. Like, he's not bad, but like, you know, he breaks tackles, but he doesn't pick up a ton of yards after contact. He's just not that fast, you know, and he's okay in the passing game, but he's not like ultra dynamic. So I think you're just kind of betting on like nothing gets weird at all in the Bears backfield. And then Montgomery probably pays off this price tag, but kind of anything goes wrong. And they get a chance to see Herbert a little bit more, or, you know, I just think things could devolve for David Montgomery pretty easily.
They could. That's just the theme for this Bears team in general. Things could devolve pretty badly. They're like a heartbeat away from Byron Pringle being the number one wide receiver, or Velus Jones, I guess.
Dante Pettis might play snaps for this team.
Hey, Dante Pettis didn't get a fair shake in San Francisco or from the Giants.
Dante Pettis, truth or is one.
I mean, Kyle Shanahan trades up for a guy, you take notice. But then I should know every time Kyle Shanahan trades up for a guy, he immediately starts loathing them for some reason.
Yeah, when Kyle Shanahan trades up for a guy, maybe Kyle Shanahan should take notice.
I know, seriously.
Trey Sermon debacle, Pettis, yeah. What, Joe Williams.
Trey Lance comes to mind.
Trey Lance. These guys are always, immediately.
This Bears receiver core, though, I mean, Daz Newsome, second-year breakout for the sixth rounder, folks. You heard it here first. You didn't hear that here first because he's not going to break out or maybe even catch any passes. But
does feel like a team that has to add a wide receiver, but it's also a team where we're absolutely just crushed if they do bring in like a Julio Jones, Will Fuller.
You compare them to like the 2021 Lions. This is a team that's absolutely going to be making like Josh Reynolds waiver claims this year, where there's going to be total randos catching like almost even odds that someone not on the roster right now will just like lead in like week 13 targets. Like, it's that kind of situation where there's just nothing set here. The brain trust clearly is not interested in 2022, and they whatever gets them through the season is all they care about. They are thinking about 2023 and beyond.
So I'm going to call my shot here. Darius Slayton to the Bears.
I would like that. Well, he's kind of Mooney-ish, isn't he, though?
He is a little bit, but Mooney was used a little bit more in the slot and on some more intermediate stuff. So I think Slayton would be like what Mooney was kind of as a rookie, just like pure deep threat. And then Mooney would be more of like a true wide receiver one.
I would like that because Slayton, I think, is, you know, capital A, capital G, actually good. I think he just kind of has been a victim of like that horrible offensive environment with the Giants that maybe kind of lost his confidence. He kind of became mistake prone player. Like, I feel like he's like an actually good NFL deep threat. Catching passes from Justin Fields, I guess I would maybe approve of that.
Yeah. And they have some connection to, I don't know if it's their wide receiver coach, but they have some connection to the Giants.
Who knows?
On the coaching tree. So I think that's where I got my head going. Knowing they brought in Dante Pettis from his Giants.
Yeah, of course.
They're going to bring in Darius Slayton.
You heard it here first. Darius Slayton going to the Bears, maybe, probably, certainly. That is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much to our guest, MLive.com's Ben Raven. Excellent stuff on the Lions. Thank you so much to Patrick Crane. This was excellent stuff on the Packers, Vikings, and the fourth team. They escaped me. Even though we just talked about them for 20 minutes. Just really, really good stuff. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back next week with an AFC North preview and some special guests. And I'll be back tomorrow with Denny Carter and Bob Lung to discuss the upcoming Fantasy Football Expo in Canton, Ohio, which we are all attending. It's going to be like Fantasy Woodstock. It gets a little bigger every year. We love it. We have a lot of fun. Come meet Denny. Yeah, just come and like stare at Denny, basically. And
he likes that. Yeah,
he does. Yeah,
we're like, you cool with this guy? He's been staring at you for a while.
Yeah. Come stare at Denny and Canton a month from now. But for Ben Raven, for Pat Crane, I'm Patrick Daugherty. We'll be back later this week.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.